following program is brought to you in living color.
I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
Jesus.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Nope.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica
with you.
Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, People Powered Radio. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast at 106.7 FM Queso in Cozy Cottage Grove. Out in Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM in Columbus. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And yep, coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation Radio or not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik. Blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow.
Says you.
From bradblog.com, thank you for joining us for another action-packed thrilling adventure. One that we told you was coming, one that we told you months and months and months ago was coming. Yes, it is official now. It is for real, even for the doubters and the dead-enders out there, the never-Trumpers. On Thursday night in the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, self-proclaimed billionaire businessman, reality television star, and some would say with good reason, accomplished con artist Donald Trump officially accepted the Republican Party's nomination for President of the United States in a dark, often counterfactual acceptance speech that was, according to C-SPAN, the longest in history. And boy, howdy did it feel like it. In the unusual speech, Trump offered a long series of dubious, often misleading, often out-and-out false series of statistics about a rising crime rate, which is the opposite of the truth, immigration rates, which were the opposite of reality, and unemployment rates, which were the opposite of, you know, the actual facts. But I'm sure we'll have time to get to fact-checking later because, in fact, with this Republican presidential nominee and this Republican Party, and to a certain extent, this disinformed American electorate, thanks to both that corporate media and a political misinformation industry that profits from playing off of a misinformed electorate, actual facts may not actually even matter anymore in this country. At least not as much as feelings about those facts, whether they are true or not. This post-factual America has propelled Donald Trump from day one, as we warned on this program, on day one of his candidacy to secure the Republican Party's nomination for president, and could very well also succeed in propelling him now to the presidency itself this November. Those who don't think so, who don't think that'll ever happen, who don't think he could possibly win, frankly, simply have not been paying attention over the past year. Or at least not listening to the Bradcast, where we've been quite consistent, I think, and sadly correct in our warnings on all of this from the beginning. Joining us now is someone who was with us on this program offering those warnings on day one, the day Donald Trump descended down his escalator at the Trump Tower to announce his run for presidency, is the great Heather Digby Parton, known as simply Digby to many longtime progressive blog readers online. Heather is the creator of the infamous Digby's Hullabaloo blog. She is also a regular contributor at Salon.com and 2014's Hillman Prize winner for opinion and analysis journalism. She's also one of the co-founders of the venerable Blue America PAC. Heather Digby Parton, welcome back to the broadcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Brad.
It's great to have you here. And before we get started, I actually just realized I also didn't say hello to Desi Doyen. So
yeah,
hi,
Desi.
Hi, Desi Doyen. Desi is here as well with us today. Wowzer. Okay. Heather, both Nicole Wallace, the former George W. Bush communications director on NBC, I think, last night, and Meghan McCain, the outspoken daughter of Senator John McCain, on Twitter last night, they both said, "The party I belong to died in the Quicken Loans arena at the RNC." But it seems to me that the Republican Party died long ago, Heather. And I want to just sort of start here with this helicopter view of where we are, since you've been with us on this issue from the beginning. It seems like the party died long ago, but Republicans and the media are now finally beginning to notice. I've been saying for the past week and actually much, much longer, the problem here is not actually Donald Trump, but a broken party, a party that is broken enough to actually make him their presidential nominee. And I think I looked at your article at Salon today. It makes a similar argument. It's headlined, "Trump's nomination signals the collapse of an ideological movement and a political party." Now, despite the obsession that the media has with each and every crazy thing that Donald Trump says or tweets, from this helicopter view, isn't all of this much more about the Republican Party than it is about Trump, in truth? And isn't that still the part of the picture that the media, at least to me, the corporate media, seems to be missing and not taking responsibility for, of course?
Well, absolutely. I mean, my piece today sort of just, when I watched Trump last night, people like us, we've watched a lot of Trump speeches. So mm-hmm. He didn't say anything new. But seeing him in that setting with the big gold Trump letters and the American flags and realizing that he was going out to, 30 million people or so, giving this speech, mm-hmm. which he, in my view, barely tempered from what he would give at any rally. As I'm watching that, you have to start thinking, and I was getting ready to write my piece for Salon, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking, how did this happen? How did we get to this point? And it really crystallized for me the fact that it isn't him. It's exactly what you said. This has been a sick and unhealthy party for a very long time. It finally died. It finally succumbed to the illness, and the reason is because it's not because they are bad leadership or they had terrible choices for president or whatever. I mean, that's all part of it, but it's really that their ideology that they adopted back starting with Goldwater, reaching its zenith with Reagan. Was this idea, this conservative movement that was built, they called it the three-legged stool. There was the social conservatism, family values, the small government, free markets, and a strong national defense. Mm-hmm. All three of those collapsed within the last 15 years. Social conservatism, it still exists, of course. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that all these things are no longer a factor, but they failed in terms of on their own merits. Mm-hmm. They failed on their own terms. For instance, gay marriage, I think that was a real mm-hmm. shocking death blow to the social conservative movement. I mean, nothing could have been more outrageous for them than mm-hmm. the idea that gay people could get married, not even 20 years ago. I honestly think they would have thought that was absurd. We had presidential candidates, within the last decade comparing it to bestiality. Mm-hmm. I mean, including, by the way, Mike Pence, the vice presidential nominee. That failed. Now, they still are doing rear guard actions all over the country in various states. They're still pushing hard on abortion rights. They're tilting at windmills about, birth control, and they have this religious liberty legal challenge going everywhere. And I'm not saying that they're dead. It waxes and wanes, the social conservative movement. But they failed. They failed, in a very spectacular fashion. Iraq, mm-hmm. the neoconservative movement that was ascendant during, you know, the 90s and came to fruition under George W. Bush. I don't think I need to go into the details of the massive failure of that. George Bush left office with 30% approval, so, you know.
Well, actually, let me break in to say that I think you do need to go into detail because you regard, this movement as having died. I'm not sure it has died. We're going to see how this election plays out, how this general election plays out over the next few months. But the reason I say maybe you do need to go into details is because, you know, the media, who I cited here in the opening, is still not reporting the actual facts, is still not making it clear. I hold them accountable for where we are and where we have become. Because you talk about all of these things that have failed. Yes, these so-called conservative ideals. Yes, they have failed all over the country. And if you look at, you know, these places like Bobby Jindal's Louisiana or Sam Brownback's Kansas, where they actually put these Reagan policies in place over the last few years and they have just, you know, desperately failed. That's still not being reported. The failure of Iraq is still not being adequately reported. This allows a Donald Trump to go to a Republican National Convention and, you know, blame the situation with ISIS, frankly, on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, when this is a genie that was unleashed 15, 16 years ago. And the media, the corporate media, never understood that this was not politics as usual, that this was not normal, that something was happening with this party, that it was going south. They did not report the facts. They continue, I think, they're much better, of course, than they were 10 years ago. But I think they still don't actually let Americans know what is going on. And I'll cite you an example, and then let me get your thoughts on this. And Desi, please feel free to ring in on this conversation as well, because there's a lot to try to make sense of today, I think. Christiane Amanpour from CNN. Now, she's actually, you know, pretty good reporter, journalist. And she now anchors, I think, on CNN International, which she was on The Daily Show talking about it. And Trevor Noah, the host of The Daily Show, said CNN International, totally different from what Americans see on their CNN. Christiane Amanpour said that her new thing is letting everyone know, and this was, I'm paraphrasing, but damn near, she says, I'm letting everyone know that now I'm about truthfulness, not neutralness, or some such. She was very proud of this idea, that no longer is she going to, and the audience applauded, and I'm thinking, really? It took you this long to figure that out? And she's a good reporter. So, I feel like no wonder we're screwed because we've got a media who still does not report the facts as they actually are. So I don't know if that, perhaps I should say the conservative movement, as you describe it, its death may be greatly exaggerated. Heather is.
Well, I would have always said that, to be honest with you. You know, with the conservative crack up has been predicted for decades. Right. I mean, this goes back to what M. Emmett Terrell wrote about it back in the 70s when it was just getting started. Mm-hmm. It's over. It's done. You know, it's cracking up. And I have never bought it before. I have to say that Trump has made me think, as watching this unfold, that this might actually be it. I mean, all movements have a beginning, middle, and an end to some extent. And I'm speaking specifically about this conservative movement that came out of Goldwater and Reaganism that is based on these three big principles. What I saw happening, particularly at this convention, was a complete rejection, abdication, disinterest. These people don't care about that stuff. Of course, what we find out is that a lot of them never did, that this was, they really, I remember saying this early on, and maybe I said it to you, that Trump, the thing that he's doing differently is that he's not dog whistling. He's just saying it right out.
Right.
And it turns out that that's what people really, really were listening to, were the dog whistles and all the rest of this stuff about ideology and free markets and, neoconservatism and whatever else they were talking about. That was never really what it was about, which, of course, when you distill down the very fundamental, firmament of the conservative movement, really it's based upon racism, nativism, and xenophobia, and to some extent just bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
And that has always been, I mean, that, you know, coming out of the Goldwater Convention in 64, that is what they organized around. So it's not like, you know, there's any big mystery about that. And that is what Donald Trump is selling overtly and blatantly. That is what's left, in my view, of the conservative movement. And so what you're finding is that this, the whole ideological facade that existed around this movement has now fallen. And what you're left with is just this kind of ugly id of racism and various forms of bigotry. So, you know, I don't know if it's dead. I mean, I don't know. You know, the Republican Party isn't dead. I mean, that's too much, because the Republican Party is, you know, there will always be two parties, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And there will always be an opposition to whatever the, you know, left, center, left, you know, is saying, you know, is selling to the American public. There will always be a reaction to that. There will always be opposition. And it's going to take some form. I think my point is that I think that the form that we're familiar with, this thing that, you know, these guys have been saying for years, I don't think it's operative any longer. I didn't see it operative at that Republican convention. It did not seem to me that anybody there cared about it. I mean, you had people last night, Ivanka Trump got up and said that she was going to fight for equal pay.
Yes.
and you know, child, you know, affordable
daycare,
child care for everybody.
Yeah.
And they all cheered like that was something, you
yes.
know, normal for their ideology. I mean,
yep.
It's ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't think it's ideological anymore at all. I think it's just purely, you know, what's left is Trumpism. And, you know, that is nationalism, xenophobia, nativism, and just, you know, and law and order, authoritarianism.
And Heather, big government.
Big government.
I mean, he's talking about spending, you know, billions on all kinds of things. Doesn't mention what the specifics are, but he's talking about spending billions of all you know, on all kinds, on just the wall alone, right?
Yeah.
And
he's gonna finance the jackbooted thugs as much, you know,
yeah.
as far as the eye can see. Rebuild the military. I mean, whatever that means. I mean,
right.
we've have got the, you know, our military is 100 times stronger than anybody else's on the planet, but
mm-hmm.
whatever. You know, this is just this really ripped away this entire intellectual, scaffolding that was holding up or basically covering up what's always been at the heart of the conservative movement. So, you know, so I don't know where they come up in November. I mean, it's a very interesting question, because there was only one, you know, the undercurrent of the convention was the rejection by certain members of the Republican coalition to Trumpism, most notably John Kasich, who refused to come to the convention in his own state, which was, you know, that's making a real statement.
Mm-hmm.
And reports are always also that he's refusing to put his organization in Ohio to work to elect Trump, which is even a bigger deal.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a serious rebellion. Now, some of this is out of total political expediency. I mean, Kasich obviously feels like he can run again, and he's positioning himself for that. Jeb Bush, who I doubt will run again, maybe he will, but, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's poised for that. He took out a scathing op-ed at the opening of the convention in USA Today, basically announcing he's going to vote Libertarian. That's the Bush family we're talking about. You know,
yeah.
they produced two presidents in the last 40 years. So, you know, this is a big thing. And then, of course, there was Ted Cruz, who, you know, is a loathsome, malevolent figure, but also a very smart politician who, in my view, and I am in the minority here, I think, among most people, who I think he made a very smart move. I think he is positioning himself as the conscience of what's left of the conservative movement. And if you listen to his speech, what you'll hear is a different Ted Cruz message than the one that we're used to hearing from him. I think he senses the zeitgeist is changing, and he's positioning himself to be this guy who's conservative, you know, the
mm-hmm.
the new compassionate conservative guy, which mm-hmm. is kind of shocking, but, you know, he's a politician.
And he
went into the belly of the beast in that crowd knowing that it was filled with Trump supporters.
Right.
And he got booed in front of Donald Trump. And I think he sees himself as the person who will be, will be one of the leaders. And there aren't very many, because, you know, Paul Ryan, Chris Christie, Marco Rubio, they all have debased themselves at the feet of this demagogue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Cruz, you know, being the guy who's standing. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out for him. He's a uniquely unlikable figure. The party establishment will still hate him as much as they always have. But still, that's where I see, you know, you see a party that is in tremendous distress. And at the very least, I'm saying it's dead. I'm not sure it's been officially declared. I'm not sure that, you know, maybe it's on life support and they're just waiting to pull the plug.
Maybe it's going to be a zombie now.
Could be. That might be exactly what it is going forward until they like I said, the Republican Party will regroup. There's always, maybe they'll have to change their name. I don't know, but or quote rebrand. But you know, there's always going to be an opposition party, and it's a majority party depending on where they are. And so you know, they're not. It's not going to just die and there'll be nothing left. Huzzah, we've arrived in utopia. We no longer have to do politics and all of us can go back to, you know, watching TV again.
Well, there are too many billionaires and millionaires that back the party now that I think will be very unhappy to not have someone representing their interests in Congress.
Exactly. And also it's important to point out too that a lot of this is a demographic shift. And I think this is an important thing about what's happened to the Republicans is they've become a thoroughly white, and as of this election, may end up being only a non-college-educated white person party. That is not a majority. I mean, there are a lot of non-college-educated white people. But this will be the first election, and it really does look like it's on target, where the Democrats are going to win college-educated whites. That's a huge change. It's never happened before since the beginning of polling, going all the way back to the 1940s. Republicans have always won educated white people. This, and it's been slowly eroding over time. I mean, it's not as if they still have a large majority of educated white people, but in this election, maybe the one that finally puts it over the top, which leaves the Republicans who have no Latinos, no African Americans, and no college educated white people. No, that's not America.
I don't know. I am concerned that we are still underestimating the lifeblood of what you refer to, Heather Digby Parton, as the conservative movement, because I believe they are so brain-addled and so brainwashed at this time for so long and have so many beliefs that are so deeply founded and deeply misinformed that I think this, even if it is a corpse, it is, maybe Desi said it best, maybe it is a corpse that keeps on kicking now, potentially for generations. And I'm sorry, I still have to take it back to our media who has not, made these people understand. If you go talk to people, they still think all of these things are true. They still think people are streaming in, undocumented illegals are streaming in through the border, and that there is ISIS in all 50 states, and that, Hillary Clinton was, murdered people personally in Benghazi. I want to blame not just media for that, by the way, Heather, but let me also note that Democrats here bear a good deal of responsibility for whatever this mess is that we are in, however you want to look at this mess. Because when Obama came into office and he said he wanted to look forward, not back, that meant there would be no accountability for all that happened during the Bush years, allowing, I think, what we are seeing today, the lies, about the war, about the threat in the Middle East, about terrorism, about, torture and waterboarding and everything else that is being successfully, and I think it is being successfully misrepresented by Donald Trump out there. I don't know if people are as skeptical as you are, Heather, or as I am, or as Desi is.
Well, they're definitely not as skeptical. I would say the media is wholly unequipped to deal with what is coming in this campaign going ahead. There have been some that have begun to do some instant fact checks. Jake Tapper at CNN has been better about that, jumping in and saying immediately, okay, that's not actually true. The fact is this.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they're ready for this. I seriously think that most of the media is unprepared to cover what the litany of lies and disinformation, it happens so quickly and comes one after the other so fast that they have fact check fatigue and they can't get to everything.
And they're covering it as if it's a normal election, as if all of this is a normal thing. They note how, oh, this is crazy, this is insane, but they're still kind of covering it with that thinking. Let me do this. Heather, can you stick around for another segment with this? Okay. Let me take a quick break and we'll come back, talk more about this, maybe play some of Donald Trump's screeching speech from his acceptance speech of the Republican nomination for president. Heather Digby Parton, the great Digby, is my guest. Desi Doyen is here with us. Another incredible week, and we got another one ahead of us with the Democratic convention coming up. So we'll get Heather's thoughts on all of that and much more on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
Killings have risen by 50%. Illegal immigrants with criminal records ordered deported from our country are tonight roaming free to threaten peaceful citizens. Our roads and bridges are falling apart. Our airports are third world condition. And 43 million Americans are on food stamps. Not only have our citizens endured domestic disaster, but they've lived through one international humiliation after another, one after another. Death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness. Trade deals that strip our country of its jobs and strip us of our wealth. Crime and terrorism and lawlessness that threatens our communities. Lives ruined. Families ripped apart. Protect us from terrorism. This is not believable, but this is what's happening. Mass amnesty, mass immigration, and mass lawlessness. Destroying our middle class. Our depleted military. History is watching us now. We don't have much time. America first.
There is a sucker born every minute. Each time that second hand sweeps through the top like dandelions.
Yeah.
Up they pop, their ears so big, their eyes so wide and low. I feed them bona fide baloney with no truth in it.
Yep.
Why, you can bet I'll
find some. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Jesus, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. This is the Bradcast, speaking with Heather Digby Parton, the great Digby from salon.com, and of course Digby's Hullabaloo. Desi Doyen, our producer, is here as ever with us as well, trying to make sense of Thursday night's Donald Trump's acceptance speech, what has become of the Republican Party, what the hell this means for America. At this point, Heather, Trump's acceptance speech, it was dark, it was long, it was not particularly funny, as he usually is, to be frank. Frankly, it was kind of boring. It was much less boring in that compilation of fear that Desi put together for us there right at the top of the segment. But so I was of two minds watching the speech on Thursday night. One, I'm thinking that was actually, the fact that it was so boring was actually kind of a good thing for Donald Trump after this tumultuous week and the crazy primary cycle in which he, you know, often seemed insane. And then two, for some reason, perhaps only momentarily, I think I was suddenly less concerned about the likelihood of Trump becoming president in the bargain. I'm not sure which one is true, because I've been quite worried about it, more so than most people who I think are still underestimating him. What thinking is correct here? Did I get it right on either or both or none of that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, for me, I've watched a lot of Trump speeches. I watch them all the time. I watch his rallies, you know, as part of my job. So I didn't find his speech to be that unusual. He seemed... You know, that's him. I agree that he didn't have the normal kind of humor, which usually is—it's kind of a nasty form of humor that he has. You know, he makes fun of people. Mm-hmm. He's—he's—you know—it's—it's—but you know, it's—it's.
But it's the humor, it's the rambling.
Right? I mean, you know, people, yeah. it's a certain kind of humor that is sort of his trademark, and that was missing. But, of course, he's giving a presidential nomination acceptance speech, so maybe I wouldn't have expected that. To me, I think, and I was watching it with some people who had never seen a Trump speech before. And granted, they're you know, relatively apolitical. I'm sure they mostly vote for Democrats. But
who are those people? They like from Mars or who has not seen?
Yeah, they just don't. They've never seen it. They've seen clips of him, you know, saying something. They've seen him on the news saying one thing or another, and maybe a press conference. But they never watched him actually speak for any length of time. And that weird voice of his, where he's just shouting at the top of his lungs. You know, they're kind of going, "What is what is that about?" And I have to admit, they came away from it chilled. I mean, absolutely chilled to the bone. They had no idea that this was, you know, kind of Mussolini-esque rhetoric that was coming from this guy. I mean, he is a real demagogue, probably the most significant demagogue maybe in American political history. I mean, he is a nominee of the Republican Party. So, you know, I mean, this is not something we normally have.
And yeah, but Heather, Ivanka is wonderful and warm.
I know.
And look
She's
at
so
all the
sweet.
Children and Eric and Don Jr. and Tiffany. They all did such a great job proving what a wonderful human being
and
he
totally,
is.
That totally mitigates everything he says because his kids are well-spoken and, you know, that and very attractive.
Much of the media, though, that was the case last night.
I know, and I kept seeing these people, too, like on my Twitter feed going, well, you know, Ivanka, what she said really kind of indicates that he's not as hardcore as he says he is. You know, I'm going, okay, you know, whatever. I mean, of course there's that, and people did love those children, and you know, I guess, to me, that was part of his showbiz thing. His kids looked like they were cast members of Million Dollar Listing on Bravo. You know, very glossy. I mean, this is what having, you know, millions of dollars can do. You get the best beauty technology in the world.
But
and
they also did do, I thought, a great job. They all gave
they were good.
Excellent speeches. They're very TV ready, not just in the way they look, but in the way they talk. They understand how to play this game, just like their dad, it seems like. And I mean, you nailed it, Heather, on day one. You were here when he announced his candidacy. You were on the broadcast. You nailed it. And you brought up a point that I had not yet really understood, which you had said, you had noted that like Ronald Reagan, that Trump was a TV star. Now, everybody knows that now, but you nailed it on day one. You said Trump was a TV star. He understands the media, how to reach into American living rooms in a way that most politicians didn't. And that quality is still, I think, as powerful now in a general election, and I still think Democrats don't get it. I still think the media doesn't get it. And he agrees with me, I hate to say it. But clip number 9 here, just very quickly from his speech on Thursday night on this.
Remember, all of the people telling you you can't have the country you want are the same people that wouldn't stand. I mean, they said Trump doesn't have a chance of being here tonight. Not a chance. The same people. Oh, we love defeating those people, don't we? Don't we love defeating those people? Love it, love it, love it.
So that's still true, Heather.
I agree. And I hope you don't think that I'm a person who is dismissing the idea that Donald Trump could win.
I absolutely don't
think he could win. I mean, you know, we have two parties. They're very closely divided. I don't have any doubt that this guy has got a tremendous amount of skill in this, you know, really dark, demagogic way of his. And, you know, especially there are circumstances that could happen, things that, you know, have been happening that could push him over the edge. I mean, I don't doubt that. I mean, I am not a person who ever says, oh, you know, let's have the other party nominate some crazy person because mm-hmm. that way we'll win big and, you know, it'll be great. I don't take that for granted.
No,
anything
I know.
Can happen, you know. And
yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, I do think this guy's skilled. And, in fact, you know, when you bring up the thing about his TV stardom, I saw, and I wish I could remember who it was that wrote this. I think it was somebody at the RNC who interviewed a Trump voter,
mm-hmm.
and or a Trump delegate, not a Trump voter, a delegate at the RNC who, you know, was her first time ever doing any of this. She came out of Detroit, I think, or maybe it was Chicago, one of those big Midwestern cities,
mm-hmm.
and she had just sort of decided she liked Trump, signed up on some website to be a delegate, and they just said, okay. You know, I mean, it's a very strange thing, the way the Trump campaign has done this. So there were people there who'd never done anything like this as delegates. It wasn't
yeah.
all party, you know, normal kind of party functionaries that you find at that, although there were plenty of those, too. But anyway, this woman, they asked her, you know, what is it you like about Trump? Well, he knows how to fire people. He knows how to do that. And in the course of this interview with this woman, it became obvious to me that the only thing she knew about him was The Apprentice.
Yeah.
This was it. I mean, she didn't, none of the other stuff. I mean, it's not like she had even his mm-hmm. other things, you know, Law and Order and the, you know, America being respected and any of that. And in fact, when it was pointed out to her, many of the things he said on the trail, she just said, oh, I don't believe that. It just dismissed
yep.
it altogether. I don't believe he actually said that. You're lying to me. You're media. You don't know what you're saying.
Yep.
This is a guy who
yep.
treated everybody really the same on The Apprentice. And, you know, I know he'll do that for America.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of going, whoa, you know, I mean,
well, listen,
how many people are like that? I think there are millions.
Yeah, I think there are millions like that. I think there are millions like you mentioned the Bush family, that they're going to vote libertarian. That's, you know, obviously extraordinary if that happens. But I know that, you know, they don't like Trump. Of course, it's personal with them. He insulted them. I understand that. But, you know, Fred Karger, long-time
sure.
Republican consultant. He was on the show yesterday or day before and said the same thing. You know, he's, of course, concerned about Trump, but you know what? Not that concerned. Not concerned enough that he would vote for Hillary Clinton. He, too, is going to vote libertarian. So you've got the sort of clueless Americans you talked about. You've got the, you know, Republicans who are against Trump, but not all that much. They'll vote libertarian. And then you've got still Bernie Sanders voters who will not vote for Hillary Clinton, and Trump is making a play for them. Here's a quick clip from his acceptance speech on that point, because I think, again, this is another point that Trump is going to make for the next 3 months, and it I think will reach across to the American people.
I have seen firsthand how the system is rigged against our citizens, just like it was rigged against Bernie Sanders. He never had a chance, never had a chance. But his supporters will join our movement because we will fix his biggest single issue, trade deals that strip our country of its jobs and strip us of our wealth as a country. Millions of Democrats will join our movement because we are going to fix the system so it works fairly and justly for each and every American.
So I feel like I have to keep pointing these things out, not to you, Heather, but just out to the world, because I think there's still this underestimation of him, of his message, of how people feel it, of our bad media unable to explain that, yeah, these trade issues, they did cost us jobs, but it was thanks to the Republicans that, you know, like Mike Pence, like Donald Trump's vice president, that all of this happened in the first place. Never mind the facts. We are in a post-factual world. So when Donald Trump says stuff like that, I think it has a real effect on people and is very dangerous and could succeed this November. Tell me I'm wrong, please.
I guess, are you saying that you think that he's right, that Sanders supporters are going to support him?
Well, we had Jimmy Dore on the show this week, and I think you know Jimmy from KPFK Pacifica Radio and the Young Turks. He was in Cleveland for the convention. We talked to him. He made an impassioned and well-considered, if in my opinion, completely wrong argument as to why he would not, that why Hillary would be just as bad or worse than Donald Trump, and even if she wasn't, Donald Trump would be so bad that people would finally realize that real change is necessary after 4 years of that disaster, well, and that he would rather wait for that to happen. And that's a smart guy. I like Jimmy. He's my friend. He's, you know, he's well considered the point of view. But I believe he's desperately wrong and desperately ignoring all of the people who would be so hurt in those 4 years. I think there's a lot of people out there who think that.
Well, also, I want to say that he was also saying that because during a presidential campaign, the midterm election that comes in the first term generally flips to the other party that's not in power in the White House. So I think he was saying if you have Hillary Clinton and the midterms in 2018, those are going to go to Republicans if she's in the White House. But, you know, if it's a Republican, then it'll go to the Democrats. Then we'll get the Congress and then it'll be in place.
Jesus, good luck with that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a gamble. It's a huge gamble.
I know.
It's not, you know, it's irrational. And I don't know where that's coming from. I haven't followed his arguments about Clinton, and I've been avoiding many of the residual arguments since the primaries, just simply because I'm done with that. But I do think I do not believe there are a lot of those people. I really don't. I think that for most people who would normally vote, on the left side of the aisle, I don't think that they look at Donald Trump and, you know, see, oh, great, you know, let's heighten the contradictions, which is essentially what they're saying, or, you know, gee, that guy, he's not that bad. I just don't think so. And in fact, I mean, you know, I'm sitting there with people last night they were appalled. I mean, it went beyond just, geez, that guy's kind of nuts, or wow, you know, he's really quite a freak. I mean, it was like, oh my God, you know. I mean, this is, you know, I honestly don't. I mean, I grant you, I think, Brad, I'm totally with you on the fact that A, Trump could win, and B, there are a whole bunch of people out there who will hear what he says, and, you know, hear it in whatever way that's either, you know, validates their biases or somehow appeals to some part of them that, you know, that they feel that they've been rejected by, you know, politics, or that politics isn't responsive to their needs, or that this guy's really kind of cool, he's interesting, he's fun, he's a star, and, you know, they're going to vote for him. There are tons of those people. I don't know how many of them there are. If Trump taps in to the great, non-voting faction of America, and that's who we're talking about, I think. They're people who they're normally not interested in politics. If he taps into that group, then he brings in, you know, then he goes above the floor that we're looking at him right now, which is about, you know, maybe 40-42%. He could do it. He could get over the top. So I don't doubt that at all. But I really do have strong doubts that there's any more than a very small percentage of liberal, progressive, you know, socialist, anarchist, whatever you want to say on the left side, that aren't going to see what Trump is.
Well, there is this, they may see what Trump is, and they may not care. They may think that's what it requires. And by the way, I'm not out here telling anybody to vote for anybody. I appreciate anybody voting or even not voting. I just want them to know what they're doing when they're voting, know what, you know, the effect is of these votes. And by the way, David Duke, the Klan leader, thinks that the environment in this country is good enough for him to get into the race for the U.S. Senate down in Louisiana. He said that I'm overjoyed to see Donald Trump and most Americans embrace most of the issues I've championed for years. My slogan remains America first. He believes the country is moving in his direction. And, you know, when you talk to people, when you talk to Americans, they think she committed a crime with her emails. They think she, personally ordered a stand down in Benghazi to the point where, you know, that lock her up chant. people really believe this stuff? They are so disinformed. Obviously,
well, that
I'm
I do
worried.
Blame the media. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, that you know, there has been an effort on the part of the media to equalize this horse race. I mean,
and
they
normalize.
Always do it. Yeah, and normalize him. And the way that they normalize this, you know, freak show is to turn her into, you know, a raving criminal. I mean, I think I described it as, you know, the way Trump described her as the leader of a death cult. Of illegal immigrants, cop killers, and Muslim terrorists who are turning America into a dystopian hellscape.
She's calling for massive lawlessness.
She's calling for it, you know,
as a policy. That's right.
Yeah, and you know, so I mean, that was the, you know, his message, and the, you know, and the media has, of course, you know, laid the groundwork, I mean, for that kind of an argument, and have not sufficiently pushed back. And I think this is something everybody needs to look for. We're going to, you know, we just finished with the dystopian hellscape convention. And I think, and the media was a little, you know, I watched them very closely, as I'm sure you guys did too. I mean, they were a little unnerved by the darkness of this convention. But I know that their reaction is going to be to try to equalize that as they cover the Democrats. They were already doing it. They're going, you know, when people were complaining, you know, this lock her up thing is pretty, you know, over the top, kind of banana republic-y, don't you think?
You think?
Know, I mean, people were saying that. And a lot of the press, including guys like Jake Tapper and Wolf Blitzer and people like that, were responding by saying, oh, well, come on, next week the Democrats are going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm going, really? I mean, I don't know. They're going to suggest that you know, somebody lock up Donald Trump. I mean, I'm for it. I think he needs to be locked up. So, you know, I don't expect that is going to be chanted, or that anyway. I mean, they had pre-printed signs that said Hillary for prison. They've got T-shirts and stuff. I mean, this isn't just spontaneously coming out of nothing. So, you know, that the media is already doing that. So everybody, when you're watching the Democratic convention, be prepared. They're going to present the Democrats as equally rabidly, you know, completely out of control as the Republicans were. And that just really isn't the case. I mean, it just isn't the case. Maybe it should be, but it isn't.
It isn't, and it hasn't been for 20 years at least. And that's my point. That's what got us to this point, the fact that the media do continue to treat it as, you know, like I said, they're better than they were, but there's still this both sides do it thing going on.
Yep.
And instead of saying, hey, this is an aberration, this is insane. Not only is you know, Donald Trump the Republican Party's Frankenstein, but now Frankenstein himself is in charge of the entire laboratory. And that's
exactly
where we are. Heather, I got to get out. Always great talking to you.
Oh, thanks for having
me. And I'm probably going to bother you again after the Democrats have their confab, and we'll see where the hell we are.
Anytime. It was fun to talk to you guys again.
You're the greatest. Heather Digby Parton, harass her on the Twitters at Digby56. Check out her work at salon.com and, of course, at the Great Hullabaloo blog, which you can find at digbysblog.blogspot.com. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break, and we're back with a little bit more broadcast and maybe some fact-checking right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away.
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You could cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Speaking of stepping back from that ledge, an email from, well, we're doing our Republican convention wrap today before we move on to the Democratic convention coming up in Philadelphia. An email from Gary Kay in response to that conversation I had a couple of days ago with Jimmy Dore, my friend. Gary Kay from New Jersey says, Jimmy Dore cares only about himself and his purity test. If he doesn't get his way, he burns down the house. It's all about him. Now, by the way, I disagree with that part of Gary's email here. Gary goes on to say he doesn't care about the people who Bernie was trying to help. Students with debt, people who lost their homes, people without health insurance, minimum wage workers, seniors on Social Security, Mexicans and Muslims, etc. How will all those people fare with Trump as president compared to Hillary Rodham Clinton? Jimmy cares only about himself and his purity test. If you don't vote for the lesser of two evils, you're voting for the greater evil, says Gary Kay. Politics, he adds, is mostly incremental. Now, again, I ain't trying to encourage anybody to vote for anybody in particular. I just want people to have an informed opinion, an informed decision when they make it at the polling place. So just by way of very quick response here, since we're running late, I agree with Gary's assessment of the problem and the problem of the idea that some Bernie Sanders supporters still have that, hey, Clinton is as bad as Trump. And even if not, Trump would be so bad that people would then finally see how everything needs to change from top to bottom. That is not how politics works. It is mostly incremental. And I do agree with Gary Kay's assessment. You can send me email, by the way, yourself. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. If you have thoughts on this either way, we've had some lively debates about this over at bradblog.com in the comment section. And yes, Desi,
yeah, I just wanted to jump in and reiterate. I agree as well with Gary's assessment, and not so much about what he says about Jimmy personally, because I know Jimmy very well, and I know he deeply, deeply cares about those people. He just disagrees on how to proceed with what to do with that, you know. But I also think that there's a funny part about this, you know, when you're looking at the lesser evil, voting for the lesser evil still equals less evil.
That's right. Well, that's
the corollary.
That is one way to look at it. So I think Gary is right in that central point, if not the personal one attacking Jimmy. And, you know, I'm also kind of troubled watching the Bernie Hillary thing that's gone over the past year. So many Democrats have taken on the Republican tactics of not just arguing your point, but of destroying your opposition on a personal level. And that's something that we saw, come up particularly in the early 2000s under George W. Bush, and in 2004, that it wasn't that they disagreed with, you know, John Kerry. It is that John Kerry wants to make us less safe.
And he must be destroyed.
And he must be destroyed. He is in league with Osama bin Laden. And, you know, the same with Barack Obama. And that has been a Karl Rove playbook now going on 20 years at this point. And it's a shame to see progressives and Democrats pick that up. It really is. I don't think you need to destroy your enemies on a personal level in order to make your otherwise very good case. That's what Republicans do. And they're good at it. And at the same time, as Heather Parton says, hopefully it's serving to destroy their party and who they are, because they are so far off the rails at this point. They really do need to just rethink it all. Start a new party. I don't know. Whatever. One point I want to get in. I know we're running late here, but I want to get in this. I've been trying to get to this all week, and I'll have to keep it brief here. On, I think this was night two of the Republican convention, Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge is this woman's name. She was one of the speakers on the... The locker up night of the Republican convention. I don't even know what it was. And here is just to give you an idea of the hypocrisy that still goes unanswered in the corporate media, which I believe still leads to what is ultimately a very dangerous electorate, because it is an uninformed electorate. Here's Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge on day two of the Republican convention in Cleveland.
First female and first Republican elected Attorney General of Arkansas. The very same office Bill Clinton held when those two launched their careers of corruption. But she acts like the law doesn't apply to her.
Okay, and then on she goes, Leslie Rutledge does, about the email servers and about Benghazi and about anything they can basically make up. Well, Leslie, and that's what, you know, went on, that went unanswered in the media or anywhere else, fine. That's what they do at these political conventions. I understand that. But here's some facts about Leslie Rutledge. She was, as we reported back in 2014, this was October of 2014 at bradblog.com. You can look up all the details there. We've got the details, the links, and everything else. Leslie Rutledge, the article starts that I wrote at the time, the Republican candidate, she was still the candidate for attorney general in Arkansas, has been discovered to have been registered to vote in multiple states in addition to Arkansas, and even voted by absentee ballot in Arkansas's general election in November of 2008 after she had registered to vote in Washington, D.C. in July of the same year. In other words, Leslie Rutledge, who is the attorney general of the state of Arkansas, who was out there calling the Clintons, their career of corruption or whatever, Leslie Rutledge committed voter fraud. And as you know, if you listen to this program, if you read Brad Blog, for years the Republicans have been making the case that there's massive voter fraud going on by Democrats, such that we have to restrict their ability to vote at all by, photo ID restrictions and everything else. And here you have members of their own party, Leslie Rutledge, a Republican at the time candidate, now Attorney General of Arkansas, who actually did commit fraud. Rutledge's Arkansas absentee ballot request form. We have a link to it at bradblog.com. Her absentee ballot request form for the 2008 general election, and then her subsequent voter registration form from Virginia. We got all of that. We have that those details there for the attorney general, the chief law enforcement official in Arkansas, who was then able to turn around and declare everyone else corrupt and criminals and need to be locked up. By the way, she was also a supporter of photo ID restrictions for voters. You'll be shocked to learn, even though she committed voter fraud. It is such a twisted world out there. There is so few actual fact checkers, people in the media willing to call these people out. God forbid you should call an elected official a voter fraud criminal just because she what? Committed voter fraud. Well, if she was a Democrat, I'm sure there'd be no problem calling her that, and much worse for having committed much less, as we see with Hillary Clinton. That is the electorate and the media in which we head towards the general election this November. But first, before we get there, we got to get through Philadelphia and the Democratic National Convention. What could possibly go wrong there? Whatever does go wrong or right, we will have it right here for you on the broadcast. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, the great Heather Digby Barton of Salon and Digby's Hullabaloo blog. And my thanks to you for spending a portion of your day or night or week with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it at bradblog.com for free. Leave us a comment there if you like, or drop us email on bradcast@bradblog.com. And I am on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. Until we meet again, and by then we'll probably know who will be the Democratic choice for vice president. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.